The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
All right. Thank you guys for joining me. I scared Matthew off, but that's fine.
It happens. He's very skittish.
I'm in a hotel room. I raided the mini bar.
Oh, I thought you were like, no, I'm done with this.
Son of a bitch.
So we are, of course, talking about Esther Purple Worm Kill Kill. I got that on the first try. I love the name. I love the homage to the Russ Meyers film, Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. Who came up with the title?
Bill Rayor.
Yeah, I did. excuse me, I'm choking.
This is an awesome interview. It's his last one.
Right? Terrible. Jesus. Sorry, man. I think honestly, when we came up with it, it's something that just made us laugh and sort of spoke to our own sort of irreverent tone. And the day that we
how'd you come up with it?
I have no idea. I cannot trace that back to anything in particular. but the day that we brought that to Dungeons and Dragons and E1 and said, this is what we want the title of the show to be, and they said, okay, that's when we knew we had the perfect partner for this show, because it really demonstrated to us that they were going to allow us to follow our passion and just make this thing exactly the sort of ridiculous, irreverent thing that it is, and allow it to be as unique as it can be. So
yeah, that is one of the funny things that, you know, right before we went into production, in fact, the night before, I have a very clear memory of saying, oh, well, you guys, we are totally effed. And you have to understand, pre-production, there's five of us, Paul had flown out, we were working, night and day, trying to put all these moving parts, we're building the set, and I'm like, we're completely effed. And they all sort of stopped and looked at me. I was like, we have gotten every single thing we have asked for, from an audience to a live accompaniment to the name.
A ridiculous name.
Everything. And the structure. Like, there was so much conversation around, shouldn't somebody have the chance to live? I mean, the basic conceit of the show, if you're just watching this, you don't know, it's the four first level characters go off into the world to become the heroes of legend, and they end up unfortunately meeting a epic level monster, a iconic monster from Dungeons and Dragons, and everyone, every single show, gets completely obliterated. It's hilarious. But people, when presented the idea, were like, maybe somebody should live some of the time. And, you know, we held our position and we got the show we wanted. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think that we are all, and I'm hopeful that E1 and the rest of the world are really happy, because we are really proud of the show. It's awesome.
Yeah, I got to see the first episode. I loved it. You have to love any time you can mix the fun of a game with the dread of dying, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, our sort of pitch as to, you know, why everybody should die in every episode, other than the fact that it's just hilarious, is that it's, you know, it makes the show not about will they live or will they die. It makes the show about how are you going to behave in the face of inevitable doom. And in, you know, in a sort of existential way, that's what we're all going to face sooner or later. We are all doomed to die, and we, it's about how we deal with that reality. And watching the players find ways to be brilliant and heroic and hilarious in the face of certain failure is it's very human, and I think people really relate to it.
So the live audience, was that always a mechanism that y'all wanted to absolutely incorporate in the show from jump?
Yeah, it was. Oh, go ahead, Matt.
No, go ahead,
Billy. Oh, I was going to say that was actually the Jedi mind trick that we played with E1.
When are we really going to say that? They're going to pull this clip, and they're going to.
That's right. No, so, you know, when we first presented the show to them, and we were building out a budget, that was one of the few things that we asked for, and they came back and said, "Totally get it, but we can't afford it. It's not going to work with this kind of show." And we said, "Okay." And then we went into a series of test shows where we went to a wonderful bar in the Valley here in Los Angeles called Guildhall.
The show got picked up. We were going to pre-production. And in before we went to pre-production, we had to practice it. We basically sold the show and we needed to run it through the tests. We needed to really mess with it to see if it would hold up through live gameplay. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah. So we took it to Guildhall, and the first show we did, I think 6 people showed up. The next show we did, 12 people showed up. By the 6th show, we had the entire bar packed with people who were really excited to see the show. And that was the show that we invited the producers to. And the audience that night was fantastic. We had these great, hilarious interactions with them, and it was such a huge part of the show that as soon as it was over, we went to talk to the producers afterwards. And the first thing they said to us was, "Okay, somewhere or another, we're going to get you that live audience." And God bless them. I really am grateful for the fact that they recognized the importance of it to the way that the show works, and found a way somehow to make it happen for us. So very thankful for that.
Nice. And do you feel like having that crowd, that energy really kind of feeds the contestants and, you know, everybody involved in the absolutely. Taping?
Absolutely. You know, it's the difference between being a live stage actor and a movie or TV actor is, you know, there's a direct feedback. I mean, you do a movie and nothing comes back. You have to, there's this hope and prayer. But with on stage, you're fed. There's an energy to it. It's like being a studio musician versus a rock star, right? And so what happens in a 3-hour sort of traditional D&D gameplay, Critical Role being the exception, obviously, but there's like, you know, people are playing intimately. There's not really a performance nature to it. Well, what happens is that when you add a host, when you add a live accompaniment, when you add an audience, things are elevated. Like, there's just no way for the performer to sit back, and the adrenaline kicks in. This, you know, the need to perform. I mean, we did a, I think one of the things we're really proud of is the cast that we were able to come up with. We have incredible performers. I think that's the secret sauce of the show, is that we've got these men and women, these people that rise to that moment and deliver. And I think that you can feel the difference when you watch the show. No doubt that's a huge part of the success.
Yeah, and that actually kind of perfectly segues into my next question, which was, can you all talk about the process of casting? Because from what I've seen, the chemistry is so amazing. It just, everybody like plays off each other really well. What was that process like?
So the first thing that we were really hyper sensitive to is we wanted to represent the entire community. I mean, for us, that was super important. Multi-genders, multi-sexual preferences, multi, you know, colors, race, diversity, all across the board. So that's something we were really keen to represent. We wanted it to be a tapestry of gameplay. The next thing is that, you know, we hired a casting director. We took it very seriously. I mean, we had 20 episodes. Each episode has four different players and a different DM. So we had to, and we wanted every show to be different, to feel different. So we went out and that was part of that success. And the way we framed the show for everyone, right? The idea, like, we want strong choices. We wanted the gameplay to be real. We didn't want like sort of slapstick silliness. We wanted the game to feel committed, and that these characters are there to live, not to be silly. Like, so we try to avoid anachronistic sort of silliness as much as possible. Play the game in all earnestness and find the comedy out of the game. And we were lucky enough to curate that kind of play. What else do you want to add, Bill? Sorry.
Yeah, I think just the nice thing about this format, and I apologize for my dog in the background. The nice thing about this format is that it doesn't require expert D&D players. We have some of those. Deborah Ann Wall, for example, is obviously one of the big stars in this community. And she's on a couple of episodes and does a fantastic job. But that's not required for Purple Worm. So we were able to just look at it and say, you know, who is a great performer? Who is a great talent who can come in and collaborate and cooperate and contribute in really creative, fun ways and not worry so much about, do they know the rules or not? We have people on this show who have never played D&D before. And they do a fantastic job. Some of them are fantastic. They're all fantastic. But, and I think that can be really fun for the audience, too, to watch somebody who is literally sort of learning the game on the fly, but having a great time with it. And nobody's very worried about the fact that they are don't necessarily know how the rules work. They're just committed to the immersive fun of playing the game.
One of the things that we do on the show too is we actually keep in people helping people at the table, right? That in the edit, like, you can see people sort of helping with the math and sort of explaining hit points and armor class and all that stuff. So we do not shy away from it. We are not afraid of new players.
Nice. So it looks like I need to wrap up. I had one quick question for you, Matthew. Stu Mocker, what class would he be?
He's a rogue, dude. He's an assassin.
Yeah.
A horrible, horrible creature.
Nice. So wrapping up, where can fans see this and when?
Yeah, great question. So it's on Freevee on Amazon, which Jury Duty, if you ever saw Jury Duty, that's where Jury Duty started. And it's also on Plex. But D&D Adventures is coming. You can also watch Heroes Feast, which is a brand new show, and Adventure Party, which is great. So check that out. Look, the other thing I'll say is that, like, our plea to this community is that if you are a fan of TTRPGs, if you're a fan of Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games, like, we got to have people come out and support it. It's great for Beetle and Grimms, obviously. But the reality is that the more people find it, the more people tune in, the more content like this we'll get, and hopefully we'll be able to do more seasons of it. But it's important that if you want shows built for you, for this community, then we really are hoping that people fall in love and come out and check it out.
Absolutely. Well, like I said, the show is amazing, and I will link in the description where y'all can check that out. Thank you so much again. This was so much fun.
Oh, great. Thanks, Mike. And I love your t-shirt.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.